Tony Black. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. And when I hear that song, Stand By Me, it doesn't bring thoughts of myself. It brings thoughts of me standing by jockeys, and sometimes jockeys need to have outsiders, which I guess I'm considered an outsider now because I'm not an everyday rider, even though I still am a licensed jockey. Stand by them. You know, you need to stand by these kids because they don't always understand what's going on. And I hope that Jock's Room is full on Saturday. And there's a meeting as I speak to you going on right now, the second meeting, to try to resolve this issue. I was going to the first meeting yesterday, and I told the guild I would be there. And Terry Meeks had advised me not to come because I'm not a favorite son of, I don't know if he means of the guild or of management. So I followed his direction. But I've had a lot of experience over there, and I know sometimes what has happened and what maybe is going to happen or what maybe will happen in the future. This agreement that management has passed out to jockeys and said if they don't sign it, this initially they said they would not let them have access to the grounds or ride. And the agreement in some part of it is just redundant for what you state and what you give as information when you fill out your license, your commission authorized license. You know, when it says, have you ever been arrested? If so, this particular, I'm reading the paper right now. Have you ever been convicted of a crime? If so, Liz, have you ever been ruled off, suspended? You do all this when you fill out your license to the commission.
Sure.
Have you ever been denied a power mutual license? List the states where you've been licensed. Everything we do. Have you ever known or by another name or an alias? Then it says underneath, number 7, pursuant to the Equine Immunity Act, you assume the risk of equine activities pursuant to Pennsylvania law. Okay. And then it says in 8, I am aware and will follow all the stable area rules and regulations of parts. Then it has under that it says, and any person making a false or untrue, misleading. Yeah, we understand that. You can't do that. Then it has under that, it says, it is hereby understood and agreed that parks will be held blameless in any incident involving injury to a guest while in the stable area and anywhere else on the property. Each sponsor accepts full responsibility, you know, anybody who signs someone in, for a loss or damages suffered. Each sponsor acknowledges that his or her guests are current and under suspension, or not under suspension, ejection, or ineligible for a license in any racing jurisdictions. Guests are to stay with the sponsor while in the stable area all the time. What they're trying to eliminate is liability. And I understand, you know, to some degree. But if you want less liability, my answer to them was create a safer work environment. And I have some instances that I stated. You know, when it came to a boy getting killed over there in 2010, we had warned them on several occasions that there was an ongoing hazard with these pesky chickens that were brought in by a trainer who had a chicken coop at the end of his barn. And the chickens were at the gap every day spooking horses. Well, I didn't see the accident that Mario Calderon was killed in, and I don't know if the chickens were part of it. But I was asked to go to court and state one thing. Did we ever warn them about the chickens? And Sal Sinatra and Lance Morrell were told on several occasions, get rid of the chickens. If the chickens caused the accident, you know, they should have gotten rid of them. If the chickens weren't there and didn't cause the accident and somebody fabricated a story, if the chickens weren't there, they couldn't have fabricated a story. So Lance Morrell and Sal Sinatra should have acted on our advice the jockeys telling them, get rid of the chickens. But I never put it in an email, but I did give my word under oath that that's what we stated. And they lost the liability suit. And it put a sour taste in management's mouth, not just with me, but with all jockeys. Now I learned one thing. You always put something in emails and send it to either Joe Wilson or the safety steward there or someone in management. It was not too many years ago when I told them their loose horse alert system is inadequate. It's a blinking light. You need to put a siren connected to that blinking light. You know, I even said the blinking light must be for the hearing impaired. We need something that notifies people there's a loose horse out there that don't have to look for the blinking light. Well, it wasn't there too many months thereafter I sent that email. A loose horse ran into one of John Service's horses. I believe both horses were hurt, and an exercise rider who didn't see the horse coming broke her arm and was severely injured. We had that in an email. I'm sure management didn't like that, and I don't know where it went when it came to liability. The next situation that happened was I sent an email saying your outside fence is improperly connected when it comes to the joints. I said the outside fence, if a jock rubs up against it with his leg or a horse rubs up against it, could cause severe injury. And I have this in emails. Not too many months after that, one of Lupe Preciado's horses brushed up against it and sliced him open. I forget how many hundreds of stitches it took to close the horse up. I showed Mike Belezzi the email. I don't know where it went, but I'm sure management and the horseman resolved that issue. But I put things in email, and I guess you could say I expect management to be proactive in avoiding these accidents, not reactive and avoid and do something after the accident occurs. So maybe Terry Meeks is right. I'm not a favorite son over there, but I also worry more about the health and well-being of the jockeys and the horses. So I'm not worried about being a favorite son. I'm worried about making a safer work environment. I just don't know why they're going to put this this paper to jockeys to sign it, and it's to sign their liability away. You know, we went through this in 2015. I went when I had the organization in full swing for the jockeys because the guild was under, they were going through bankruptcy and everything, and there was no representation. Right. So I put this organization together, and we got access to the money that was given in gaming to the jockeys for health insurance. But in 2015, they wanted all the jocks to sign a paper, and it was a waiver of liability, that they would not be responsible for any accident happening on the grounds to a jockey, and they weren't going to carry the catastrophic injury and accident insurance anymore. We went to a meeting, and I invited the guild to come to the meeting. They weren't invited by management. Management first said they didn't want them there. I said, well, we want the guild to be there because, you know, this organization is going to be defunct very soon because I'm going to not be an everyday rider 2015. And then the other parts of the other members of the organization, Harry Vega left town. He went someplace else to ride. Joe Hampshire stopped riding about the same time I did. And Victor Molina was there, still riding. And Yannette Castillo was our accountant. She took a job with an accounting firm and no longer was working for us. So the organization, we said, is going to be defunct and obsolete. And I advised the members all to join the guild. And they did after the meeting when we resolved the issue of them not carrying catastrophic injury and accident insurance for jockeys. And the reason they really resolved the issue, because there's not a track in the country that's not workman's comp that doesn't carry catastrophic injury and accident insurance for jockeys. And I said, it would be a terrible embarrassment for this place to be the only track that doesn't cover the people that help to put on the show for you because you don't want to buy catastrophic injury and accident insurance. It would be a total disgrace. And you people should be embarrassed to not do that. And we resolved the issue. The only thing that came about was an agreement that I have in front of me still where it says if there was a liability issue, we would only sue in the Bucks County court jurisdiction. We wouldn't sue in any other jurisdiction. And that's how we resolved the issue. Today, while this meeting's going on, this agreement, like I said, it's kind of mostly what we sign when we sign and get our license, most of the information, except the liability part of it. And I think they're going to, I think their next step is to do something to relieve themselves of liability and then relieve themselves of having to carry any catastrophic injury and accident insurance. You have to understand, these tracks, because they're connected to gaming, they're not on a, you know, a survival mode anymore. They're well-funded, and they should not be looking to cut corners when it comes to anything of this nature, you know, when it comes to carrying insurance. And sure. At this particular time, what even confuses the situation more, Governor Wolf is out there trying to access the gaming revenue from the horsemen, and that's a bill that they're trying to present and get through, and it would dramatically cut the amount of money that thoroughbred racing and standardbred racing get from gaming revenue. So there's so much going on here, and it's so confusing, and I just am hoping that the jockeys are well represented, which Terry Meeks, he's a man that's been around and knows the ropes. And Tom Kennedy, the lawyer that's with him, is a guild lawyer from, I knew him 30 years ago, and what a smart man, you know. So I know it gives me confidence that Tom Kennedy's there today, or yesterday he was there, and he's going to get this thing resolved. I mean, he goes back to the Nick Jemus and Giovanni era of executive secretaries of the Jocks Guild. You know, and I really have confidence in Tom. He's a smart man, and he's been around. I'm just hoping racing goes on as usual on Saturday. I just thought that instead of telling the jockeys to not be named on horses, they all, it would have been nice if they all be named on horses, and they go to the jocks room ready to ride. And then management would have to have a decision to put this thing on the back burner on Saturday or cancel the races, but it wouldn't be the jocks not want the ride. The jocks just wouldn't want to sign this paper, but they want to ride. And then horsemen could have put it on the management, or you guys canceled. See, I don't want to put the horsemen against the jockeys, because we understand their livelihood, and they understand ours, and we should be always on the same page. But I just hope it doesn't come to this, you know, where the jockeys, you know, don't ride because they didn't name on horses. I hope they resolve the issue and ride, and I hope if they didn't ride, it would be on management. You guys are asking them to sign the rights away so you can get off the hook to ever be liable for anything that happens to a jockey or a guest at your racetrack. Other racetracks don't do this. Why is Parks doing it?
Well, and Kennedy also, in addition to that waiver, there's also the complaint you mentioned about funding the guild for benefits, and they right. also complained about the condition of the jocks room as well.
It's deplorable. It's been deplorable when I was a jockey. I just want to see them address and attack one issue at a time. You know, when I got all the jocks to sign up in 2015 for the guild, because I resolved that issue over the catastrophic injury accident insurance, but I told them we're not going to be an active organization. I took for granted that when, you know, the guild had its membership there, and it was, you know, close to 100% membership, that the track kicked in just like every other racetrack does in the country that has a guild jocks room, and they pay so much funding per starter, you know, and that goes into the guild treasury, and it's used wisely. But that is part of it. And Tom Kennedy knows the whole story when it comes to tracks funding the Jocks Guild. You know, it's a Jocks Guild room. You know, do what every other track does. You know, what every track does that's a Jocks Guild room, they fund, there's so much paid in per starter. Why would Parks be any different? I could understand years ago before gaming revenue that they were on the survival mode. They're no longer on survival mode. There's money there. Utilize it to benefit the people that help to put on the show for you, unless you don't like the show. And that's what scares me with Parks. Do you, you know, I know it's very profitable to run a casino, but the casinos rode in, that bill rode in on the backs of horses and jockeys and trainers. That bill to get gaming in Pennsylvania rode in on the backs of horses. Let's not turn our backs on horse racing and say, well, we don't, you know, we don't really care if you race or not. And that's the impression they give you. You know, they don't care if they race or not. You know, we have a casino. No, let's be fair and let the industry that brought gaming to Pennsylvania, let it be part of gaming in the way it is legislated, initially legislated.
Yeah, and you know, and on that topic, Tony, yesterday, the third hour, we had Tommy Tomlinson from Bucks County, and he addressed the governor's missive from the day before that, you know, wasn't discussed with anybody, and you know, there's been widespread pushback immediately, and frankly, you know, if the governor wants to, you know, wants to go after that trust, he's going to have to do it in the legislature, and it doesn't make any sense that, you know, literally 2 years after creating the trust, that same legislature is then going to, you know, turn their back on everybody that put the trust together. But at the same time, I got to say, this is such a mixed message that Greenwood puts out, and they lower takeout after years of having just an onerous and idiotic and indefensible takeout structure. They finally move on that, and they bring it into line with the rest of the industry. They probably, you know, could go much further and make the wagering cost structure attractive to players, because frankly, the fields are very bettable, and if you actually had a product priced properly, there could really be a potential to develop handle. So they do that. They create they've created the Pennsylvania Derby racing festival and have put a lot of effort into that, and then in the flip side, they create this issue, which feels like such a minor series of expenses to them that it just doesn't. It's just weird that they show certain commitment and then they turn around and do this and fight what is just not a battle worth creating. It seems. I mean, it just doesn't. Right. It's just silly.
And they would like to say, well, if it's not a battle worth creating, then what are you guys worth fighting? Why are you guys fighting it? Because the long-term effect of it and their next step is to relieve themselves of any liability.
Oh, right. And it's important to the jocks. It's
right,
an important.
Absolutely. But, you know, Steve, the impression I get, well, number one, I used to be really good friends with Bill Hogwood. I've been to his home. We were friends, been to functions, family functions and everything. After I testified in court that we warned Lance Morrell and Sal Sinatra to get rid of those chickens, I walked past him on Derby Day, and I went up to him, hey, Bill, how you doing? Put my hand out. And he walked past me. I got nothing to say to you. And his wife did give me a hug and kiss and said, I'm sorry, Tom. But I thought to myself, you know what? Why wouldn't you come and talk to me as a friend why, you know, I went to court and testified that we warned you of the hazard? Well, because he was probably told by people we never said anything, and it was a fabricated story, which it wasn't. But this situation, when it comes to worth fighting, it is for the jockeys. For them, it's just a small obstacle they're putting up, because in my whole view of the situation is, number one, they don't care if they race or not. And number two, when they were embarrassed into the takeout, which still needed to be greatly adjusted, they were embarrassed into doing something there. That's why they did it. Anything that they could do, they really haven't done. And their whole mindset is, if we do nothing, eventually, you know, the sport will destroy itself and go away or be minimized for the amount of days they run here if we do nothing. If we do little things that irritate the participants and the public gets a hold of it, that the participants' defense is not a legitimate defense, then it serves their purpose. You know, if we do nothing, you'll go away. And once in a while, we'll do something just to irritate the situation. But if we do nothing, instead of promoting racing like we should, because, like I said, the casino rode in on the backs of horses, do nothing, we'll never be accused of knocking racing. And we don't have to do a lot of things against it to get rid of it or to minimize it. It'll just take longer because we're doing nothing. Mm. And that's what the feeling that I get. And, you know, it's just through my experience over there on a daily basis and keeping aware of what's going on over there. You know, even if I'm not an active everyday jock, I'm still a person that has feelings for the industry. And, of course, once you're a jockey, as many years as I was a jockey, you're always a jockey.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta love these guys. Even if some of the guys that you gotta love at times, they make you scratch your head and say, are you that uninformed? That's a nice way of saying, are you that stupid? But I'll say uninformed.
Too funny.
But that's the way I feel, Steve. And, you know, I've never been a loss for words or nothing when it comes to expressing my opinion. And it's my opinion.
Well, the frustration here is that it's amazing. These two stories on parallel tracks this week, and on the front side of this, going from last weekend, you've got all these horses whose careers started at Philadelphia, and there's some very nice, particularly some very nice 3-year-olds that are, you know, clearly have been developed. And there's so many positives that seem to be happening, whether it's, you know, mares being brought to the state and, you know, enhancement, to the program and its attractiveness to breeders, and the sales numbers are up for those that whether they breed to race or they breed to sell. We talked to John Service on Monday. Mrs. Chapman has got a pair of really nice horses. It's exciting to see that for Someday Farm. I just Linda Rice's Max Player that won the Withers on Saturday started the career in Philly. You would think that they would sense that there's some good things happening and run with it.
Capitalize on it.
Yeah, it's maddening.
Don't knock it and don't begrudge it. Be proud of saying, man, this horse came out of parks, or this trainer came out of parks. I'm going to a function on Sunday that Ashley Eisendale, who's the director of marketing for the Pennsylvania Horse Racing Association, and I talked to Bruce Casala, who produces the Let's Go Racing show. It's a function at the farm that Smarty Jones stands on in Anvil, PA.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's to show support. And he says, a lot of the guys from the jockeys and trainers, we want you all to come to this function. You know, the media will be there probably, and Let's Go Racing will be there. And show support for the game. The participants have to get up off of their hands and their asses. Show support for the game. Go to a function like this. Send a message to Governor Tom Wolf. Listen, our families depend on this sport. And it's not just our families. The farmers depend on this sport. Who do you think feeds these horses? How about the farms that raise them, the PA breds? What a beautiful breed. I mean, PA breds can go any place in the country and race. It's because they have a great breeding program, you know, in Pennsylvania. But we have to show support as participants. Even if you're an old, halfway out of the picture participant like Tony Black, I'm gonna be there. And I've called riders, and I'm going out tomorrow morning. I know I didn't want to create any distraction this morning because they were having their second meeting, which, man, Steve, I don't want the riders to be held accountable for not racing Saturday, but I want management to at least make every effort to have us race Saturday. You know, the horsemen, you don't want to have the horsemen punished because of some stupid agreement that management wants us to sign, and it fits into their scenario. Well, we'll get these people fighting against each other, the jockeys and the horsemen. You know, let's divide them. No, My word and message goes out to horsemen and jockeys. Let's stand together and let's promote our sport. Let's get out there and do everything that we can do and bring the positive word to the public that this is a great sport. You know, we don't make these horses run. It's instinctually bred into them. If you take running away from them, it would be like taking something away that's a natural part of any living entity's makeup. You can't take that away from the horses. You know, it's part of their makeup. It's bred into them. It's instinctual. You know, don't take that away from the horses, the ability to compete and the ability for people to thrive and make a living with them. With them, not from just from them, with them. And let's not take the farmers and throw them out and say, well, we don't need you growing hay, straw, and oats and raising these animals, you know. Let's not place that burden on farmers. Let's do the right thing as participants and support our industry. It's our industry. We can make it better. You always can make things better, but you got to work. You got to be interested. You got to be a big mouth like Tony Black sometimes.
Well, Tony, in fact, I yesterday the Pennsylvania, both the breeders and HBPA were circulating the Equistar. It's actually just coincidental that it's the Stallion Show day, and so the opportunity to use the Stallion Show as a rally essentially kind of doubles. So as you mentioned, Anvil, and I'll send out the link again coming up on Sunday. It's on Sunday, right? Not Saturday. Sunday. Sunday noon to 3 in Anvil. And of course, they'll bring Smarty Jones out for everybody to see and inspect for those that are probably, you know, whoever's already booked to him for this year. And Tony, I appreciate it. I thanks for the update, because you know, people, I think, saw the headlines and needed to hear some more of the specifics. So I appreciate it.
Well, and if you come to the function on Sunday, you can come hungry, because I'll have lunch for you.
There you go. And you get a chance to meet Tony Black, too. And
yeah, I might have to wear my vest and helmet.
that may be around the offices in Ben Salem. Tony, I appreciate it. We'll catch up next week.
All right, you take care. Keep up the good work. I appreciate it. Thank you, Steve. Love you, brother. Bye.
Love you, too. Tony Black, everybody, the one and only. We're going to take a quick timeout. Steve Haskin, got to get Steve in here, and we got plenty more to do. Got a bunch of players that are registering, and whether they're going to play today or whether they're just registering and getting their packages for tomorrow. You got a lot of players that are picking their tables and hanging their placard on the back of the chairs. Starting to get close. Take a quick break. Get Haskin in here. We'll talk about the three results from Saturday. We'll look ahead to both the Sam Davis, the San Vicente, storm the court on Sunday. They'll draw that card today. We got I want to tell you about some other races. A few horses that are jumping back, including some spots you may not have looked at yet. The Chantel Lannery Memorial Race this year at Fairgrounds is going to include Alms, who starts the three-year-old campaign. So there's a lot going on. And, of course, the Derby Future wager as well. Steve Haskin next at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. We're back at Bally's Las Vegas. Steve Haskin standing by. Steve Haskin in Vegas. There's a Steve. You should have one of those residencies, like.
I've been there right? Once.
What year?
I know what year it was. It was 1994, because I watched Holy Bull win the Haskell at Caesars. So Mandy was 10, and I forgot who was in charge of the sports book at the Sands when there was a Sands, but he put us up. Put us up in a beautiful, beautiful room, a big suite with a staircase that went upstairs and a jacuzzi out there. In fact, we were in the Belmont room.
Oh, that's funny.
And it was right outside the pool, and he got us tickets to Siegfried and Roy. We had a great time. I did not do any gambling. I don't know if I should say that on this holy weekend over there. But I didn't. We went on day trips every day. We went on a trip to the Grand Canyon and Hoover Dam one day. And that was great. I mean, it's, they take you to the West Rim, which is like there's like no railing. I mean, it's just like the, you go right to the edge, and they serve like a barbecue lunch there, and you have to be driven there by the Hualapai Indians. You stop, and then they take you in like this dilapidated school bus to the West Rim. So that was nice. And then another day, we went on a trip to Zion National Park. From there, which was great, and we took trips on our own. We drove out to the Valley of Fire, and it that day it was 115 degrees,
Jesus.
And we hiked into the Valley of Fire looking for some historical thing, and neglected to bring a bottle of water. And the only thing living in this canyon that we walked in was this itty bitty little lizard that was hiding in between this little crack to stay out of the sun. And we came out, and I took a picture of Joan and Mandy literally staggering out of this canyon, the Valley of Fire. That was, and we drove to Lake Mead. Oh, yeah, we did all, you know, and then we, like I said, we saw shows. We went to all the, you know, the valleys at the time had like the main dinner buffet. In fact, you know who we met for dinner that night at Bally's was Roxy Roxborough.
Nice, the great Roxy Roxborough.
And I don't know if you remember, he wrote our Las Vegas column for the Racing Form. David Scott. He wrote a column, and he was good friends. And so we had dinner with Roxy and him, and that was fun. And, you know, so basically we just ate and did scenic things and went into the jacuzzi and. And it was great. I remember Caesar's had a very simple buffet, but oh god, it was lox and cream cheese and bagels and capers and onions and a chopped egg. And it was just like this great buffet. So we went there. That was a good time. But I remember going to the. I remember watching Holy Bull win. So it was 1984.
Nice.
Excuse me.
Nice. Well, you wouldn't recognize it. It's funny because I there was a long stretch between my visits too, until I came back for the first time for NHC, and I had not been since I worked for Procter & Gamble in like 1980, would have been about 83 or 84. So I had not been in decades, and you know, I had marginal recollection from that trip, but. You know, the last 5 years, we also were here for an HBPA convention too, and out at the South Point. So I, you know, the last 5-6 years, I've been here, you know, a handful of times, and it's special for our, you know, for our interests, for horse playing interests. But it's an experience every time you come here.
I wouldn't even recognize it because
there was no
New York, there was no Parrot, there was no what's the name of it, the one with the gardens,
Wynn open yet?
Wynn was there. Valleys is where we went to the pirate where you used to go.
Treasure Island.
Yeah, the pirate ship battle. What's the name of that real famous one? They built it all the way down at the end of the strip. Bellagio.
Oh, well, but no, Bellagio's right here, right in the center, right next to Caesars.
Oh,
with the fountain.
Okay.
You're thinking with the fountains.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's it. I don't know. I guess there was sort of a we went to MGM Grand when they had, you know, they had like a theme park in there. They had old characters in there, and you know, interacted with the kids. And
nice.
I mean, it was great to take, you know, it was great to take kids. But I have to correct myself. We did play the nickel slots at the airport on the way back. I think we bet like 3 nickels, and we were out 15 cents, I think.
So you did at least say you played a little bit, tiny bit.
Yeah, but at the airport we did nothing. And we went. Speaking of your another one of your crazy song renditions, we did actually go to Viva Las Vegas show you know, there was a show called Viva Las Vegas. They had all kinds of different acts. Oh, and we went to, he also got us to see none other than Wayne Newton.
Oh, fabulous. Fabulous.
Yeah, so we saw Siegfried and Roy and Wayne Newton. And then, we went to Viva Las Vegas. Those were the three.
Don't ever come back. I'm going to tell you right now. I don't think you could have done better. You basically got the quintessential historic Las Vegas experience.
I got the touristy one. I didn't get the.
If I ever qualify
for the National Handicapping Championship, I'll come back.
All right, that's what we're going to use. That's what we're going to use as a parameter. I love it. Well, Steve, let's dive in, and we got a lot to review. We got the three preps from Saturday, and I've been on the run, and so I haven't had a chance to read anything that you wrote in terms of the recaps. But let's talk Max Player and 'tis the law. We talked quite a bit with Sid yesterday, who had has been talking to Barkley on a regular basis. And I was on hand for 1,000 words, which turned into something special. Some thoughts about last Saturday.
Well, obviously I'm mostly impressed with 'tis the law. I had said earlier in the first and in the second Derby Dozens, and I said, number one, to absolutely throw out the Kentucky Jockey Club. And Tiz Law had ranked number four, and I said, if he runs a big race in the Holy Bull, he will, he'll go to number one, which he did. So so I moved him up to number one. You know me, I'm a sucker for the champagne. I mean, he just looked so good in the champagne last year. Ran fast, did it like a classy horse. Love his pedigree. There's nothing about his pedigree I don't love. And he seems to have all the tools. And he was a little green in the Holy Bull, a little late changing leads. And he drifted a little to the inside. But a lot of good horses do that once they get clear. But all in all, I mean, I think it was a huge race. I ordered his thoroughbred number, but I haven't gotten it yet, so I don't know what his thoroughbred figure was in there. But his equibase speed figure was a 108, with very fast closing fractions. So if you look at that, and he also got a triple digit buyer number, but 108 for equibase, that's a monstrous number. So right now, I mean, there's really very little you could fault him. It's like I'm riding next week, by the way, is that, the cicadas, come out every 17 years, and so does Buckley Tag and Sakatoka Stable on the Derby. They're the cicadas of the Derby Trail. They show up every 17 years.
But I'm pumped.
It'll be interesting. It's so funny that when Buckley had Funnyside, he had quite a reputation as being a bit of a curmudgeon, especially with the media, and he would just get on the media. He had no tolerance for the media at all, and a lot of people would go to Robin for quotes and stuff, but Buckley was in his own way was hysterically funny in his curmudgeonness. I got along great with him. In fact, I wrote a column when he had Funnyside, and I had one of my best headlines on that column. I said, is his Barkley worse than his bite?
Nah.
Because he's, it was a real softy inside, but boy,
yes.
He could not handle the New York media. Oh God, they hated him. And then I don't think it's going to be the same this time. But Funnyside was supposed to work for the Belmont Stakes on a Wednesday, and every news agency showed up. So he put out a release that Funnyside was going to be working after the break at 8:30. So NBC showed up with their camera crew and CBS with all their news reporters and ABC and ESPN, Sports Illustrated. I mean, everybody, came out there. The only thing is that proxy worked him at 5:30 instead of 8:30. And I was staying over Ed Fontaine's house in Long Island. And we were talking the night before. He said, "You know what? I don't trust Barkley." I said, and you know, trying to get Ed out, you know, up, you know, before like 7 o'clock was like near impossible. So I said, "You know, I got a feeling he's going to work him. I have a feeling he's going to throw a curveball." So we got up really early. We got up at like 4:30 or so, and we drove out there. And sure enough, we worked at 5:30. You have never seen a more disgruntled group of humans than these cameramen out there. I mean, these cameramen cursing Barkley out, and all these ABC, all these national newscasters, and the camera crews, and everybody out there cursing Barkley out because they all got there at like, you know, 7:45, 8 o'clock. They found out that he had worked, and he wound up working at 57 and change. And I remember Bobby Frankel telling me, he said, "Forget him. He's got no shot." But again, I love Barkley. But the one thing Barkley hated if you used his age. He was very self-conscious about being old.
Yeah.
And I think he was like 69 at the time, and he was about to turn 70. You know, which is like he felt old and ancient. Well. 17 years ago.
I hope that's, you know, not going to. Yeah.
So if anybody mentions that, I don't know what he's got to be like 85 now. Or something.
82. I think 82, 83 is what Sid said.
But he was like in his 60s then, so, and he was so self-conscious about his age. So I mean, it should be very very interesting. You know, obviously I won't have any, you know, one-on-ones with him like the funny side, but that was a fun. He actually made it a fun year. Just watching all the New York press curse him out every single day for you know, he would close the door and just not talk to them, and then if you asked him a question that even resembled a stupid question, he would jump all over you. But he was fun. I mean, like I said, I got along great with him. We had a great relationship. But it's good. I mean, I didn't think we'd see him back on the Derby trail again with Saratoga Stable with another New York bred. You know, it's crazy how these cycles work. You know, and this horse could certainly turn out to be better than more talented than Funny Side. I mean, too early to tell, but you never know. I mean, he's got all the tools, so. But I was very impressed, and I tell you what really impressed me about the race was there's no telling how good the runner-up is. This Etienne Indian, I mean, he finished 11 and a half lengths ahead of the third horse, you know. And I'm saying, you know, and I'm watching this horse, and he, you know, he was competitive. He stayed with him, and he was pulled away from everybody else. Which, by the way, speaking of Ete Indian, by the way, I mean, I've seen some head scratchers, but the biggest one so far in the Derby Trail is having a maiden with only 1 6-furlong race and a horse who just lasted to break his maiden by a diminishing nose among the 23 horses in a future wager, and not having Ete Indian, who was second in the Holy Bull to the future wager favorite. Who earned that 108 Equibase number, 11 and a half lengths at a third horse, and no Royal Act, who's second to one of the other favorites for the Derby, who was closing fastest of all in that race in the Robert Lewis Royal Note. Neither one of those horses make the top 23, but they put in the horse that finished second to Nadal, who's had one, like Nadal is Man of War. I mean, What is he doing? And Palm Springs just barely held on. I love the second horse. Palm Springs just barely held on in his second start to break his maiden by the vanishing nose. What is he doing on the top in the 23 betting interest and leaving these two horses off?
Well,
I mean,
and
I don't get it.
Yeah, and you know, if you're just going to use figures, for instance, I mean, that day in the end, who's, you know, that was only his second race on dirt. Yeah. He goes from that 86 buyer in the allowance win, the one turn, to this mile and a 16th, two turn, a 95. He moves up, another 9 points, and also going to, we're also going to see Patrick on Saturday when we talk about the Sam Davis. He's got that solo
that's
Volante,
a nice that's
another
right,
nice horse. So Patrick, Patrick's
that improved.
Yeah,
but that's the Indian. I mean, when he came off the grass, I mean, he ran.
That's a good point, Steve.
Mile, I think 135. I don't know how he got to an 82 buyer. I mean, how much faster do you want a 3-year-old to run his dirt debut?
No, it's a fair question about the wager, about the future wager.
What are these two horses doing on there? I'll tell you one thing. You want to talk about disrespect? The Breeders' Cup juvenile winner and the 2-year-old champion is 30-1.
I don't think
that. 3-year-old champion, whether you like him or not, 30-1.
That number is going to look when he runs on Sunday, any kind of performance, and it's just a comeback race in 7/8 in the San Vicente. But still, any good performance and that number will be sliced in half.
Oh yeah, but I'm just saying, making him that. I mean, he's still a 3-year-old champ. I mean, how do you make the champion 30-1? It's not like there's a bunch of super horses in here. We don't know yet. But what has he done wrong? I mean, yeah. I don't know. He hasn't done anything wrong this year. Why would he be 30-1? He's a Breeders' Cup winner and a champion. I don't know. I don't get any of these things. But I'd love to get an explanation how those two horses wound up in the top 23.
Well, I'll have Darren on tomorrow because we got to talk about it, and we're going to talk about the 20 horse gate as well. So we'll discuss it. I'll bring it up with Darren. He'll tell you how the decisions were made. Steve,
yeah, it's a combination of putting those horses on who have accomplished nothing, basically nothing. Well, a maiden who's run one, he was not even going to get to the Derby. He's still a maiden with one start. I mean, what is he going to do? Break his maiden and then run the Kentucky Derby? It doesn't make any sense. But to leave those two horses up who ran second, the two horses that could be the two Derby favorites, and the horses that run second to them aren't even on the list. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's an explanation. I can't even remotely see it anywhere.
Steve, since we brought up Royal Act, let's talk about the Lewis next, and then we'll circle back to New York. Thousand Words is a different kind of a Baffert horse. So we talked extensively he's very steady and just grinds it out. He's obviously going to keep doing that as we get to a mile and an eighth and beyond. Royal Act ran a courageous race. Ertin is thrilled. And High Velocity ran a sneaky good race. People are going to dismiss him as not, being a 10 furlong horse. But it looks like Baffert's going to press forward, maybe point towards Sunland with him. And then nobody's talked about it, but Tis a Magician disappointed.
You said he disappointed?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he got beat, what, a length and three quarters? I mean, he can't be. It was not bad. But that's all good. You don't know what to make of the race. It's a fourth horse was beaten only a length and three quarters. But I tell you, the horse that Thousand Words reminds me of, with his running style and the way he runs, he reminds me a lot of AP Indy. He runs with that head down, and it looks like he's doing nothing. And then all of a sudden, he's like on the lead. He said, "Well, how did he get there? He doesn't have a quick turn of foot. He just keeps coming and coming." Like AP Indy, it looks like he's going to be beaten, and then he turns for home, and then like at the 3/16th bowl, AP Indy's like a half a length in front. You say, "How did he get there? I didn't even see him move." And that's what this horse reminds me of. He's certainly a warrior, that's for sure. You know, I don't know yet if he's a mile and a quarter horse, only because of all that speed in his female family. He's got an absolute ton of speed, all sprinters. But maybe we'll get it from the sire side. But I mean, he's obviously. The thing that if he's going to get a mile and a quarter, what's going to help him get there is his mind. I think the horse is a very intelligent horse, knows exactly what he has to do. Certainly, is not afraid to bull his way through horses. He'll go wherever you put him. he's just a horse you like to have. The only question you have is that, you know, when he gets up against better horses, can he afford to cut it that close? You know, a horse like Buck Passer could keep winning all his races by three quarters of a length and a half and a length and stuff like that. But, you know, heading to the Derby trails has taught me better horses. But he could be a horse that no matter who he runs against, he's going to win the same way. He's certainly not going to blow you away. But all in all, I was very impressed. I watched his last work in Company. I was very impressed with his, with the way he went last time. I thought he worked really well. I think who also looked great in his workout was Nadal. He's a beautiful moving horse, big long striding horse, very smooth, fluid stride to him. But again, I mean, you know, is he another Justify? Is he going to go into the, Derby with three lifetime starts? I know he's got a beat on Justify, but Justify made his debut in a longer race. You know, he made his debut with, you know, in a short sprint. So he's got a lot of catching up to do.
Agreed.
But the one thing with Baffert is that Baffert knows how to get his horses fit. You know, when they come out, they get fit fast. But
we discussed that with him on Tuesday. Actually, we talked about training methods and not being afraid.
I heard him. He always maintains that. You know, when he gets horses out, you know, they are fit. You see the way he works his horses. Nobody works their horses like he does.
Nope.
You know, I mean, even his mediocre horses work fast. So, and if they can't, then he calls them. You know, then those are the horses that aren't going to be on the Derby trail. He trains like the old-fashioned trainers. You go back to Max Hirsch, Sonny Chim Fitzsimmons, John Gaver, Green Tree. They all worked their horses long and fast. And if they couldn't hack it, they were gone. They got rid of them. And the ones that were left were all your champion Bel Air horses and Green Tree horses and Calumet horses. All these horses, that, you know, King Ranch horses. Those are the ones that were left. They were tough, hard-knocking horses because they put them through a lot. And if they withstood it, then they were your big champions. They couldn't. They would just, you know, get rid of them. In those days, the big stables, they didn't want bad horses. He's undefeated, which you always love to see undefeated horses. You know, so, you have to be impressed with both of them. You know, at least we get these, you know, the big name horses. At least they're coming out and they're running. They're doing something. You know, it's frustrating when you get, listen, as much as I loved American Pharoah, you know, it's frustrating sitting there and until March and having him at number one, you know, when Dortmund is undefeated and Dortmund's winning the San Anita Derby. You know, and I'm sitting there, you know, I'm keeping this horse. I'm saying, you know, I'm not making a fool of myself. I'm basically what I saw as a two-year-old, you know, everything about him and watching him work. But, I hate it. That's the way a lot of trainers are doing it now. Oh, we'll put him away until the Rebel. Oh, you know, Rebel's in March. You know, that's a long way off. Just, you know, sit on a horse and you not know where to rank him. You know, do you keep him high up when everybody's winning stakes? You know, it's difficult. You know, it's a lot easier when you had horses that actually ran, that actually went into the Derby, you know, of 10, 15, 20 starts. Now they go into the Derby of four starts and two, you know, God forbid you should give them more than two races as a three-year-old. You know, everybody wants to go, you know, two races. Now, the thing with Tis the Law, by the way, is that what I do with him may very well depend on what Barkley Tagg does with him. I've read some reports where he's leaning towards the Louisiana Derby, and I've read reports where it's between Louisiana Derby and the Florida Derby. You know me, I have nothing against the Louisiana Derby, but I don't like the 6 weeks when you have two starts and you're going to have one start, in like 11 or 12 weeks. And, you know, the one thing that I always have to mention is that the Louisiana Derby has one winner of the Louisiana Derby, one, has gone on to win the Derby in the past 96 years. And that was Grindstone, and that's when the Louisiana Derby was run earlier, and Grindstone was able to come back and run in the Arkansas Derby after that. Funnyside ran in the Louisiana Derby and came back and ran in the Wood Memorial. But they moved the Louisiana Derby up closer to the Florida Derby, because at the time, if you remember, people were knocking horses coming in there for 5 weeks. Remember, everybody's going back, oh, the last horse to do that was Needles. You had to go back into the 50s. Hmm. Now, you know, horses come off the Florida Derby all the time. And we've had horses come off 6 weeks. Mind That Bird came off 6 weeks. Animal Kingdom came off 6 weeks. So, I mean, it can be done. You know, but those horses came into the Derby off such unorthodox ways. I mean, to come from, you know, directly to some Sunland Park, and the other horses came from Turfway, making his dirt debut. I mean, yeah, everything's changed. You don't know where a Derby horse is going to come from.
Hmm.
But the one place they're not coming from is the Louisiana Derby.
For whatever reason. No, it's strange. You know? It's very odd that the Phillies.
96 years.
Yeah, and the Phillies are the Oak Phillies come out. Let's see, Steve, and we'll save that for next week when we talk, when we talk about what's coming up. But I'm anxious to see how the change in distance in the in the races, how that is going to play out. With the slightly earlier, the mile and a 16th, the mile and the 8th, and the mile and 3/16. Let's see what effect that might have. Steve, we got to press forward. I want to get your Max Player thoughts and Shotsky and everything that happened in the Withers, because obviously the race came back a little slow. Then there was also the Swale, which we didn't touch on, and seemingly Jimmy Jerkins going to have to put the spurs to green light go,
yeah,
maybe.
We'll see. I was hoping. You know, listen, I like the fact that he ran him in that race, but, you know, when you run that race, I didn't expect him to win. I mean, the mischievous Alex, I mean, is a very fast horse. But I was just hoping to see more of a kick. He didn't show a kick in the Champagne. I need to see a little turn of foot in that horse right now. As far as Max Player, visually, he looked good. But like you said, it was a very slowly run race. They came home the last two fractions in 26-1 and 13-3. I know it was only his third career start. The first two were at a mile at Park, so he does have some kind of a foundation. But he had a great trip. He had a clean trip on the outside all the way, circle of field. I like the way he mowed everyone down. Shotsky ran okay. I mean, he's a nice horse. I mean, I don't know if we saw any. Any Derby horses in there? It's too long to the Derby. We don't know what these horses are capable of. But 86. I hate to go by buyers that much. As we said, some of them don't make sense. But he did run an 86 buyer. His Equibase number wasn't that bad. It was in the 90s. It was okay. But what I liked about him, he's got a nice long fluid stride, and he's got ability. There's no doubt about it. And I like his pedigree. He's got a lot of toughness in his pedigree through French Deputy, Verbatim, and Halo. People don't know much about Verbatim, but Verbatim is the son of Speak John, who personified the toughness of the old Elmendorf, the Max Gluck Elmendorf horses that are long gone. But they were all tough, tough horses, and Verbatim was one of the toughest. I mean, he just ran like every few weeks, ran hard every race. French Deputy... he's the French Deputy. If you look at all the pedigrees from Rob Whiteley, who's one of the top breeders who bred all those great, horses for Carl Icahn and, grade one winners and champions. He always looked for a French Deputy on the bottom side. Because French Deputy produced a lot of tough milers. But he gets a lot of toughness from there. And of course, Halo is all tough. Now, as what I said before, right now, from what I read from Linda Rice, it looks like the plan is to wait for the Wood Memorial.
Right.
It's just two months away. So you have to wonder, is he going to have enough bottom and experience? Mostly experience, having only four career starts and only one start in 12 weeks. One start in 12 weeks. I'm just not used to that. I'm never going to say a horse can't win the Derby because I've seen horses win the Derby in all kinds of bizarre ways now. But if I'm ranking a horse, when you combine everything, you combine the slowness of the race, you combine the competition. Again, I don't know how good Shotsky is. He ran a game race. I don't know how far he wants to go. But I mean, you're going to wait 2 months running him in the wood, and then wait another 4 weeks. And, that's a long way. That's only one race. Like I said, one race in 12 weeks. So can it be done? Possibly. But I'm not going to get too high on a horse when he goes against everything that I remember as far as the Derby trail and how to get to the Derby. But what do I know? Times have changed. But I'm not knocking the horse. He's a nice horse.
Steve, let's get to the Davis and to the there's a seemingly important maiden race at Gulfstream, a nine.
Oh boy, is there ever!
As well,
I posted that in my in the comments. I mean, that maiden race at Gulfstream is live. It's a mile and an eighth, and I am really looking forward to it. You've got, a lot of horses can win it, but there are four horses in there from four major stables, four major owners and trainers. And if any one of them break out in that race, they're going to be the now horse. So I'm really looking forward to that race. I don't like to put it. I'm not going to discuss a maiden race before the Davis, but being brought up, you've got this Will Sing for Wine, it's Yamat and Team Valor. You got Telephone Talker, who's Chad Brown and Ken Ramsey. You got Spa City, who's Karen McLaughlin and Godolphin, and you got All Eyes West, Jason Service and Gary and Mary West. All these horses are in excellent, excellent form. They all look like they're ready to bust out and break their maiden. They all have excellent pedigrees. So, I mean, there are four legitimate potential Derby horses here. And if one of them should, stand out in this race, he's going to be the next hot horse. The fact that this is a mile and an eighth maiden race, I find that very, very interesting. And as far as the Davis, listen, it doesn't take a genius to know that they all have to be Independence Hall. He's got the speed figures. It's funny, if you look at his buyer figures, in his first start he runs an 82, and then he runs a 101, and then he runs an 82 again, and his third rep numbers are the same. He runs okay first time out, and then he jumps to a -2 in his second start, and then the next race he runs a 3.75. So he had these peaks and valleys. Not that the valleys are low, but listen, Adjaweed, who was second in the Remsen, who I like the fact that he closed off of slow fractions. As the distances stretch out, he's certainly got the pedigree. He's the son of Curlin and Shadwell, and he's got a good closing kick to him, and I'm curious to see how he handles this track. Sol Valenti is the interesting horse in here because, he closed like a demon in his first two starts on the grass. He came from way out of it and just mowed everybody down the stretch. And Bianco, decided to put, and he's bred for, he's by Caraconti out of a King Mambo mare, so he's bred for the turf. But Bianco put him on the dirt, ran him in the Mucho Macho Man.
Right.
And, he didn't make a huge dent on Chance It and As Seen on TV. But he finished a solid third, was beaten a little over two lengths. And, he closed well enough. But, that race got fairly good numbers. And, again, they ran a mile in 35 and change. So I'm really curious to see what he does. The one thing that Bianco does, he's been working him on the grass and the dirt. So he's been running him on grass and dirt, and he's been working him on grass and dirt.
Well, including, yeah, including Steve,
Grant,
including
a 58-1.
It's unbelievable. I mean, and I that's at Palm Meadows. And the thing I'm curious about, if that was with the dogs out. I mean, how do you?
Well, something's got to be going on. Did you see what he worked 7 furlongs in? 2 works back.
122.
122 and one. 7
yeah.
furlongs. I don't know what's going on with the Palm Meadows turf course, but I mean, these are insane workouts.
Well,
there's another horse in the race that you have to watch out for. It could be
Premier Star.
Premier Star,
yeah.
Who he beat this Caracaro, who came back and won very impressively.
Yep.
He was supposed to run the Holy Bull, but he didn't run, and he hasn't worked. He hasn't worked in like 12 days, so I don't know what happened to Caracaro. But this horse beat him, and then came back and then won an allowance race by over 5 lengths. So, you know, got an unusual pedigree. And if I tap a chair out of a Hold That Tiger, you don't see too many Hold That Tiger mares. But, you know, Hold That Tiger was a pretty decent horse, up to a mile, you know, at least up to a mile and eighth. He ran a big race in the Woodward. But who knows how good this horse is. But, listen, if Independence Hall is as good as he's looked, then he's going to be very, very, very tough to beat.
Well, and
yeah,
then
Tony Brett to go along, and he's been working well. He had a bullet work, and he's had 4 works at Tampa.
Yeah.
So obviously he loves the surface there. Sometimes it's hard to to equate the morning workout times to how they're going to handle the track in the afternoon. But I mean, he's going to be the horse to beat.
Premier Star is dangerous because he's going to go to the front. He's stretching out from 7/8, and it's going to be Jose Ortiz is going to have to make a decision about, you know, where he's going to set up shop. I mean, if you got to be a little concerned that this Premier Star just lights out, and there isn't necessarily an obvious candidate to run with him, and he does become a bit of a wire threat. I do want to mention even Chapalu. I'm going to look at, because I'm a big fan of Ed Seltzer and Bev Anderson. They breed and campaign a lot of horses. They've had some good ones. This horse is moving to the dirt for Delacour, a flatter out of a black Benelouche mare. And, you know, he's making a transition to dirt. And so, you know, be aware that here's a mystery horse to some degree. Gerald Bennett should not be just glossed over either. A Tampa-based horse that's coming off a pair of buyers that's not getting over me. The first stake type for He's Had Enough. This is a really good, you know, the Sam Davis has elevated itself quickly. And
it really has. It's great.
Grade
now,
3 status. Yes.
Too, by the way. He's playing by Arno Delacour, who I think is an excellent.
It's terrific.
Trainer.
Very good.
But you can't knock this. You know, he's run on the grass at Laurel. He's run on the grass at Keeneland, and he's run on a synthetic at Woodbine, and he's run well in all of his races. You know, the question is, how is he going to run here? Obviously, he's in one race he wins wire to wire, and then on the turf he comes from seven, eight lengths out of it. So. Yeah, it's hard to tell how this horse is going to how he's going to run. But by the way, Black Minnelouche, you know, most people don't even know who he is. Black Minnelouche, by the way, was in the Breeders' Cup Classic that had Galileo and Tisnell and Saki and that incredible that European invasion that year. You know, Saki coming off the arc and Galileo, you know, superstar coming in here. Aiden O'Brien also had Black Minnelouche in that race. Yeah, he was a pretty decent horse, but again, you don't see him in many many pedigrees.
Not in too many pedigrees. Steve,
yeah.
let me wrap it up because I got a group in here that I want to kind of close out the morning. But we got the San Vicente to look forward to as well on Sunday with Storm the Quartz return. We'll see that field later this afternoon at Santa Anita when they put the card together. So I appreciate it, and we'll see what we get from that maiden race and the Sam Davis and more when we talk next week.
Bye, Steve. Enjoy the rest of your stay there.
I appreciate it. Steve Haskin, everybody, and gonna move in this agglomeration of JK, and we got Pete, we got Brian Skirka, we got Joe Metka, and we're not gonna take a break. Let me bring him over. We're gonna circle the wagons. Slap the headset on. And Brian, take the mic, and we'll get Joe and Jonathan, and we'll do our mic passing routine. Let me say.